Welcome to the Gila Members Community Radio's new program, Earth Matters. Earth Matters brings you in-depth coverage of local, state, and national environmental issues. We aim to inform, challenge, engage, and inspire our listeners. Three hosts alternate weekly shows to bring the listener a broad range of topics and expertise on environmental and conservation issues that affect us here in Grant County, around New Mexico, nationally, and globally. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. In part two of the Earth Matters Holiday Program, we will continue our discussion of 2012 environmental and conservation events and accomplishments and give you a taste of what's to come in 2013. Joining me today are my two Earth Matters co-producers, Donna Stevens, Executive Director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and Kim McCreary, Regional Director, Staff Scientist with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we thought we'd continue our end-of-year discussion and start off first by talking about the big event of 2012 for us here in the Gila region, the Whitewater Baldy Complex Fire, and mostly talk about the aftermath of that fire. And we'll also discuss the collaborative efforts of the environmental and conservation community here locally and in New Mexico. So we'll be talking about the newly formed Southwest County Commission Alliance, efforts to protect the Gila River from a diversion under the Arizona Water Settlements Act, and hopefully a few other things we hope to squeeze in there. So starting off with the Whitewater Baldy Fire, as everybody knows, I think at this point, the fire started in mid-May earlier this year as two separate fires in the Mogollon Mountains east of Glenwood. And both fires were caused by lightning, and they soon merged into the Whitewater Baldy Complex Fire. They consumed nearly 300,000 acres or 465 square miles, mainly in the Gila National Forest. And about 20% of the affected acreage burned at high intensity. And, you know, we had at its height nearly 1,200 firefighters assigned to the fire. It was a pretty tremendous effort on the part of our firefighters to contain that fire. More than 26,000 severely burned areas have been seeded by aircraft, with about 14,000 acres mulched with straw dropped by helicopters. And there have been a lot of concern over flooding, and we're going to talk about that today. There were a handful of structures that were actually lost in the fire, but no human lives. And at least $23 million was spent fighting the blaze during the 2 months it was active. So that gives people sort of a sense of how big this fire was. And Donna, I wanted to start with you here. Maybe you can tell us what some of the aftermath has been from the Whitewater Baldy Fire.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be glad to do that. I've done a little bit of research and learned a lot, actually, about how some of these processes occur. After there's a big fire like this, there is a lot of concern in some of our local watersheds about some post-fire flooding and how that could really impact a lot of people, as well as their infrastructure, homes, barns, buildings. And I've learned some stuff that I never knew before about the whole permitting process for being able to do work in any of our rivers and streams. So we're talking here about the Gila River. I'll talk mostly about that, but also some tributaries of the San Francisco, like Whitewater Creek, Mineral Creek. And so there was a lot of work done in these different areas, some pretty heavy-handed work that a lot of people have been very concerned about. So I met with several people and talked to different people from different agencies like U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, New Mexico Environment Department, Army Corps of Engineers. I talked to the planners of Grant County, just trying to get some information, the Forest Service as well, trying to get information about how this work was decided upon and what the process is. So first I have to say that Governor Martinez declared an emergency in Catron County and Grant County because of all the work, because of the fire and the concerns over what floods could do to these really damaged watersheds. And so I would imagine that some of our listeners have seen some of the work that was done on the Gila River and perhaps Whitewater as you're going through Glenwood and Mineral Creek as well. And I went out during, I believe, July and took photos as some of the work was being done. And you know, we're very concerned about having these huge earth-moving machines in our streams and creeks and rivers because, let's face it, we don't have that much surface water here and we really need to protect what we do have. So when I met with the Army Corps of Engineers, what I found out was that the Army Corps issues permits for individuals and agencies to be able to do any kind of earth-moving work in the Gila River and other rivers as well. And as long as the work complies with the letter of the law, with the Clean Water Act, permits are issued for people to do work. I mean, there's obviously certain criteria they have to meet, but once those criteria are met, they pretty much can get in there with a giant bulldozer or an excavator or whatever machine they're using and move dirt around in the river. And there were a lot of concerns by local residents about that work being done in the Gila River. I'm talking here between the 180 bridge that goes, the Highway 180 bridge that goes over the Gila River downstream to the Iron Bridge. There was a lot of work done there. If you've looked at that at all, you could see that there was a big overflow channel that was dug, which kind of gave the river two different paths to go into. And when the county did the work, there were some big levees that were formed on either side of the river, and that wasn't the original intent, but it's my understanding that what happened is originally the county had planned to use an excavator which would remove all the fill that they were moving, and it would take it out of the floodplain altogether and out of the flood-prone area of the river. But because they heard weather reports that indicated that there was going to be some rainfall, they ended up needing to use a bulldozer. So these machines do different things. The bulldozer pushed up these levees, and later on those levees needed to be removed. And so there was also another kind of heavy-handed thing that was done by the county, and that was placing these humongous boulders on the banks of the river to protect a county-maintained road from washing out, because as we know, rivers meander, and the Gila River was moving over to, it was getting closer and closer to a county road, which is the only access that residents have to their homes, and so that road needed to be protected. So they placed these big boulders there, and again, they were given a permit by the Army Corps of Engineers to do this work. And before any of this work gets done, anyone who applies for a permit also needs to consult with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service if there are any endangered species wherever they're planning to do the work. And there certainly are in this stretch of the river. We've got spike dace and loach minnow. There's also southwest willow flycatchers. And some of the work that was done destroyed some habitat for the southwest willow flycatcher by pushing over or cutting down, I'm not sure which, some of the cottonwoods and willows that they nest in and use for cover and breeding sites, nesting sites. So there was definitely some concerns over those types of activities there. And we understand that there was really a lot of fear about some potential flooding, and that's certainly understandable because when you denude a landscape with some of these big fires, there can really be some serious impacts downstream. So there was a lot of understandable concern and fear about this, and it perhaps got a little bit exaggerated and perhaps somewhat over the top. So as people like to say, mistakes were made, and it's hard to know exactly how far we should have gone with that work. I mean, in retrospect, of course, we can see that not very much happened because it didn't really rain very much during the monsoon season. But it's understandable that people were really fearful about big floods that could occur. And so I talked to these different agencies, and the Environment Department had some concerns over what was done there on the Gila River. And Fish and Wildlife Services likewise had concerns about work that was done. So there's definitely some mitigation activities that are going to occur to address some of these concerns. And we are going to continue to speak to the agencies and with Grant County to see what their plans are for future work in that stretch of the Gila River, because Grant County still wants to do work there. They have some plans for the types of things they would like to see there, and they're mostly activities that would protect their road, as I said before, and also the Iron Bridge, because when the river meanders, it approaches the Iron Bridge at different angles. And the approach right now, the angle that the Gila River is heading in as it gets to the Iron Bridge, isn't a particularly good angle. So in order to save that historic structure, there's going to have to be more work done there. And some engineers have drawn up plans for what needs to happen there, and it remains to be seen exactly what will occur.
Donna, you mentioned mitigation needs to be done. Has that already been done, and what has been done to mitigate? I think you'd mentioned these levees. Maybe you could explain a little bit more.
Yeah, so as I was saying, the county really felt like they were under a time pressure, because they were afraid with a big monsoon rain event that there could be a flood. And so they ended up using a bulldozer, I guess because that's what was available at the moment, and perhaps because it would be faster. I'm not exactly sure. But so the bulldozer ended up leaving these levees when it pushed this fill from the river. You know, we're talking about the substrate of the Gila River, the floodplain. So, like, we're talking sand and gravel and cobble. And they ended up pushing up these two levees that kind of paralleled the flow of the river. And those needed to be removed. And that work was done in October. So that's finished. And it sort of remains to be seen what other mitigation work will be done to counteract some of these effects that they had. I guess from talking with the Grant County planner, that one of the activities that Grant County would like to see happen in the near future is planting some willows and cottonwoods in this area where they've done the work, so that it would help to stabilize the banks, because vegetation holds the banks better than anything, certainly better than any man-made structures that we can put in there. And they also want to build a little wetlands in one area adjacent to the river. So As I said, though, there's still some things that are kind of up in the air about what other work will be done.
And the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance is tracking everything that's happening right now on these issues.
Yes, the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance is tracking this. I've spent far more time than I ever thought I would finding out about permits that are issued by the Army Corps of Engineers. And it was quite an interesting learning process, let me tell you.
You know, another thing I wanted to ask is, I've been hearing rumors that there's been some trespass cattle in the burn area. Do either of you know anything about that?
Sure. I've heard the same, that, you know, the federal government, the Forest Service, spent, you know, a lot of money reseeding these high-intensity burn areas to prevent erosion of soils and to mitigate the flood potential from precipitation events. So we've spent a lot of money doing this reseeding and trying to heal the watershed. And I've heard from folks who have been up there have seen trespass cattle in this area of the wilderness, in these high-intensity burn areas. And, of course, you know, this is a concern, because we need these areas to revegetate, and we need, they're very fragile, very sensitive, and shouldn't be trampled, and obviously new growth shouldn't be eaten either. So
does the Forest Service know about this?
I believe so, and I believe that the Forest Service is following up on reports of trespass cattle, trying to figure out where they are and who they belong to, and trying to make sure that they stay out of these very fragile areas, and that we can let these burn areas heal and restore themselves, and so we can basically prevent these big flood events that people were so concerned about this summer during the monsoon season. So That's about all I know, but we will be keeping people apprised of what we hear back from the Forest Service on this issue. So we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Allison Civic, and I'm here with my Earth Matters co-producers, Donna Stevens of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance and Kim McCreary of the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, for part two of our holiday show. All right, so let's talk now about the new organization formed this year called the Southwest County Commission Alliance. Donna, can you tell our listeners what this group is all about? Like, why was it formed and what its purpose is?
Sure, I'll try to do that. They were formed in June, and the conservation community did not know about their first meeting, so we weren't at that meeting, but we quickly became very alarmed at what they were all about. And so since then, we've been at every single one of their monthly meetings to keep track of what these people are up to. And at their inaugural meeting, the one that we were not at, we read reports in local newspapers and online newspapers about some of the over-the-top rhetoric that we heard at that first meeting. And they said things like, the Sierra County Sheriff Joe Baca said things like, if the Forest Service closes any roads in the Gila National Forest, we're going to cut the locks off of those gates. Well, never mind that they aren't even going to put up any gates. The fact is that this county sheriff was advocating breaking the law, which we found rather alarming, because if you break one law, what's to prevent you from breaking another? And we really don't think that our county sheriffs should be breaking the law and should be deciding on their own which laws they're going to uphold and which they aren't. So that was one thing that got us alarmed at the very beginning. And it seems like this group, no matter what their rhetoric is, it seems like this group was really formed to roll back any environmental protections that we enjoy now. One of the things they're very concerned about is, as we heard from Joe Baca, closing any roads in the Gila National Forest under the travel management plan. And what we need to keep in mind here is that the travel management plan leaves open on the ground more than 3,300 miles worth of roads. And that's enough to drive from San Diego to Maine. So any concern about closing the forest is unwarranted in our opinions. There will still be ample recreational access for everyone. So that's one of their big issues. And the Southwestern County Commission Alliance has also, they've also taken action against wolves. So they say that they're not adamantly opposed to having a Mexican gray wolf recovery program, but they have asked Governor Martinez to intervene to remove so-called problem wolves from the wolf recovery area. One of their other actions, and that's really all we can go on, the resolutions that they take and the letters that they write, one of the other actions that I witnessed at one of their meetings was against critical habitat designation for the jaguar in Hidalgo County. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has a proposal on the table right now to designate critical habitat, which would be the area that would help jaguars to recover their numbers so that they can come off of the endangered species list. And the commissioners came out against that. They don't support that, even though it's a very small area in Hidalgo County on public lands, I might add, that wouldn't affect any private enterprise activities. Another thing that they're concerned about is the Oregon Mountains Desert Peak National Monument, which is a bit perplexing because of the six counties that comprise the Southwestern County Commission Alliance. Doña Ana County, which is where this monument will be located, isn't among the counties. And so we're a bit befuddled about why they're even considering something that's in a county that they're not even in charge of.
Donna, could you tell us what are the counties that are in the Southwest County Commission Alliance?
Yes, those counties are Grant, Hidalgo, Catron, Sierra, Socorro, and Luna. Another concern that we have with this group is that although there are six counties that comprise the group, in five out of their six meetings that I've been at, there's only been commissioners from three of these counties there. And it's a little confusing to me about how, say, Socorro and Sierra counties and Luna for most of the meetings as well could even know what these guys are voting on in their counties' names if they don't show up at the meeting. So we're working on that right now. How does this issue work?
Well, you know, Donna, I just wanted to follow up because you mentioned the resolution that they passed calling for the removal of quote-unquote trouble wolves.
Yeah.
I was, you know, it was very good to hear that Commissioner Ramos, the chair of the SWCCA, as reported by the Grant County Bee, said, and I quote, "We are not authorizing cutting off the wolf recovery program." And, you know, I'm interpreting that as saying that somehow at least one commissioner with it, you know, representing Grant County in the alliance actually does recognizes that there is some value in the wolf recovery program. So that was one good thing that I did read.
Right. And so are there any other issues that... you guys want to bring up that some of the other issues that have been addressed? If not, well, we can go on to the HB 148.
I think that would be a very good one to talk about.
All right,
about.
So yeah, let's talk about that next. So recently, the Southwest County Commission Alliance had a meeting with Utah State Legislator Ken Ivory, who sponsored a bill in Utah which demands that the U.S. government turn over to his state the title to most of the federal lands in Utah. HB 148 was signed into law earlier this year by Utah Republican Governor Gary Herbert, despite the legislature's own legal counsel's written declaration that the bill has a, quote, high probability of being declared unconstitutional. Well, Mr. Ivory and New Mexico State Representative Yvette Terrell from Otero County announced their plans to meet with Governor Martinez to urge her to support similar legislation here in New Mexico. And there's talk, we're hearing, that Herrell will introduce legislation in New Mexico's upcoming 60-day legislative session that begins in January. And you know, I know you guys, Donna and Kim, you both looked at this issue more closely. Maybe you can explain a little bit more about what this means, this bill.
Well, yes, we were there at that joint meeting, and Utah State Representative Ken Ivory is actually a lawyer, and he is also president of an organization called American Lands Council. And I happened to pick up one of the handouts they had at that meeting. And the title was Liberating Our Lands. And, you know, after I listened to his entire presentation, I thought to myself, well, that's a bit ironic because what they're proposing is nothing more than a land grab of public lands. And if our federal lands were under state control, lands going to be leased or sold to the highest bidder for mining, oil and gas drilling, and other extractive uses. I mean, in essence, big corporations will own what was our land. And many of our wild places, and I think lots of folks would agree with me, that we have some of the best places in the lower 48 to go hunting, fishing, and camping, and hiking in, a lot of those areas are simply going to be plundered. And as far as I see it, the SWCCA was really formed to push its own anti-environment agenda. And they, at this particular meeting, they were talking a lot about the health and welfare of the people. And that's why we need to put these lands under state control. And I would submit here that actually what they want to do will hurt the health and welfare of New Mexicans. You know, there's talk about being fiscally responsible. Well, this would certainly be fiscally irresponsible. And one of the first things I just wanted to touch on, because I was reading a report recently that came out, and it was put out by the Outdoor Industry Foundation. And active outdoor recreation in the state of New Mexico contributes about $3.8 billion annually to the state economy and supports some 43,000 jobs. And that's just only one example of why this would be fiscally irresponsible.
Yeah, and on that theme, do the states really want to assume management of these lands and all the costs associated with maintaining roads, fighting fires? I mean, where's that money going to come from? And they're going to have to buy these lands from the federal government. Where's the money going to come from for that? So I agree. I think on the benefit side as well as the cost side, this is a huge fiscal boondoggle to go down this track. It just seems crazy.
I think one thing that we need to keep in mind, too, and you did say this, Kim, that these lands could be sold and or leased for resource extraction. But one of the things that we need to really keep in mind here, we talked about this HB 148, this bill from Utah, and it says right in this bill that lands could be sold off. So although this representative, Ken Ivory, kind of tried to downplay that, saying that, oh, public lands will remain public lands, they'll just switch from federal to state control, the fact that there's something in this bill about selling off lands makes me very suspicious, because if there's the possibility to do that, you can bet it will happen. Another kind of ironic thing, speaking of ironies with his presentation, is that at the end of this bill, which you can find on the American Lands Council website, their very own general counsel says that this bill will probably be found unconstitutional. And there's so many ironies here, but I think that's yet another one, because these are the very same people who are always harping about the Constitution and how we need to follow it, and they're all about things being constitutional, except maybe when it comes to their pocketbook, and they could benefit somehow by leasing or selling public lands. And I know one of the people who's been behind a lot of this land grab kind of stuff is our own Representative Steve Pierce. And I happen to have a copy of a letter dated November 26th of this year, of 2012, so it's very recent. And if I may, I'd like to take just a minute to read just a few sentences from that letter. This was a letter that Steve Pierce and another representative wrote to Speaker of the House John Boehner. And his letter says, and I quote, "Divesting the federal government of its vast land holdings could pay down the deficit and reduce spending. The federal government owns roughly 650 million acres of land, or one-third of the entire land mass of our country. Over 90% of this land is located in the western states, and most of it, listen to this, most of it we do not even need. To the surprise of many, the National Park Service, the trustee of our nation's most treasured landscapes, holds just 12% of this land. The other 88% is managed mostly by the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service at a cost of several billion dollars per year. Strategically transferring ownership of these lands where it makes sense would reduce duplicative land management costs, boost revenues through the resultant economic activity of more productive and local land management, and is consistent with the principles of federalism our founding fathers envisioned." So this is just more land grab, and as we know, Steve Pierce has been funded quite heavily by the oil and gas industry, and I'm sure that the oil and gas industry is partly behind this land grab if not to sell lands, to privatize public lands outright, at least to lessen the regulations on them so that they can make more profit off of public lands.
And I just want to add one last thing here. Since 1845, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the federal government has the unlimited authority to manage public lands. And I want to emphasize again, public lands are our lands. They're the land of the lands of the people. And that's something I think that we really need to hit home, because again, echoing what Donna just said, and I've heard others say, this proposal is a land grab.
Thank you, Donna and Kim, for that discussion on the Southwest County Commission Alliance. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us here at Earth Matters. Back to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Allison Civic, and I'm here with my Earth Matters co-producers, Donna Stevens of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance and Kim McCreary of the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance for part two of our holiday show. We're going to shift gears now and talk about the Arizona Water Settlements Act, or the AWSA. Let me start by explaining that to our listeners that my organization, the Gila Resources Information Project, has partnered with Donna's group, the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and the Center for Biological Diversity to form the Gila Conservation Coalition, or GCC. And GCC works to protect the free flow of the Gila and San Francisco rivers and the wilderness characteristics of the Gila and Aldo Leopold wilderness areas. So I really wear two hats. I'm the director of GRIP as well as the director of the Gila Conservation Coalition. And one of the other things, I've been working on the Arizona Water Settlements Act since, and this Gila issue since 2003. And more recently, I was appointed by the Interstate Stream Commission to the Stakeholder Input Group under the AWSA planning process. And so we're going to talk about that here now for the next segment of our show. And I do want to just start out by making sure that everyone knows what the AWSA is and how it works, because it's pretty complicated. And then we'll move into giving everybody an update on the planning process. So the AWSA is a congressionally approved water bill that provides $66 million in non-reimbursable expenditures, meaning we don't have to pay this money back, that could be used to meet water supply demands in the Southwest Planning Region of New Mexico. And these are the four counties, Catron, Luna, Hidalgo, and Grant counties. And this money could be used either through construction of a water development project or projects that would increase water used from the Gila River by up to 14,000 acre feet per year, or through non-diversion water projects, meaning it won't use Gila River water. So New Mexico will receive a guaranteed $6.6 million a year for 10 years, and that money's already started coming to the state this year in 2012. And this $66 million over 10 years can be used for any project that meets a water supply demand. But the state may also receive an additional $34 to $62 million if it chooses to construct a New Mexico unit. And the state must notify the Secretary of Interior by December 2014 if it will use Gila River water or not. So we're coming up to that deadline in the next 2 years. Stakeholders throughout the region have been meeting since 2007 to develop AWSA project proposals to cost-effectively balance water supply and demand in the region while also protecting the Gila River. And their successful collaborative efforts resulted in more than 70 projects being submitted to the ISC back in November of 2010. We've now whittled those projects down to 16 or so projects. The majority of the projects are non-diversion projects. So 14 of the 16 projects on the table still are non-diversion projects, and we've got two diversion projects on the table. But the non-diversion projects that meet the needs of everybody in southwestern New Mexico are things like municipal and agricultural conservation, to development of regional infrastructure for water supply delivery, water reuse and storage, watershed restoration. So that's kind of gives everybody a sense of where we're at right now.
Where are we now in this process?
So right now, the ISC has selected, the Interstate Stream Commission has selected the 16 projects that it is going to consider under the Arizona Water Settlements Act, so for funding under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. And right now they're being analyzed by the ISC's contractors. All of the projects are being analyzed for technical feasibility, costs and benefits, and environmental impact. and the Bureau of Reclamation is actually analyzing the diversion alternatives. So they're looking at alternative diversion amounts anywhere between 5,000 acre feet per year up to the maximum 14,000 acre feet per year. They're looking at alternative diversion locations. So at the upper end of the Cliff Gila Valley, the middle of the valley, and the lower end of the Cliff Gila Valley, they're also looking at alternatives for storage of this water. And so they're looking at alternative storage locations as well as alternative storage projects like a big giant impoundment reservoir in Schoolhouse Canyon or Mongoose Creek, or a series of little small ponds, storage ponds throughout the Cliff Gila Valley. So really the diversion and conveyance and impoundment alternatives are huge. I mean, and the BOR is going to be doing an appraisal level analysis, so looking at costs. They'll also be doing cost-benefit analysis, and they'll also be doing appraisal level environmental impact. So giving people a sense of the potential magnitude for environmental impact. So I should say appraisal level is a Bureau of Reclamation term. It's just sort of this first cut conceptual analysis of these alternatives. So it's not in like 30% engineering design or something. It's less than that. So very conceptual. So that analysis process is going to be happening between now, the end of 2012, all the way into the first half of 2014. So roughly June or so, spring into early summer of 2014 is when we'll start to see the first results from all of these analyses.
I wanted to take a step back here for a second, Allison. You said that there's two diversion projects on the table right now. Didn't the city of Deming originally have a diversion project that they wanted to have analyzed?
Yes, there were three diversion projects selected after the Tier 2 process. So this was the ISC approved back in February of 2012, three diversion projects. The Deming Diversion Project, which would have been a big diversion impoundment pipeline to Deming for municipal or agricultural use. Hidalgo County's Diversion Project, which was diversion somewhere in the valley, impoundment in Schoolhouse Canyon, but they never defined a water user. They just said, we want to keep diversion on the table. We, Hidalgo County, don't need the water, but somebody will, so we want to keep this project alive. And then the third diversion project is the Gila Basin Irrigation Commission, and their project is really centered on agricultural use in the Cliff Gila Valley. And so Deming decided at some point in the summer, fall of 2012, that because of the high cost of this diversion project, $325-350 million, they didn't really want to be on the hook for that project because of the high cost and because of the fact that they really don't need this water either, that their 40-year water plan basically says that they've got enough water just by transferring some of the agricultural water rights from the farms that Deming has bought up over the years, transferring those ag water rights to municipal water rights, as well as water conservation and some water reuse, that, you know, they're going to have sufficient water over the 40-year planning period. So, and that they didn't really want to take on these high costs as well as compete with the other project proponents for a diversion. That's what we've heard, the reason why they dropped their Deming diversion project.
So Deming thinks that the costs would be too expensive. So has anyone stepped forward to say, yes, we want that water and we will pay the high cost?
No end user has been defined, which is kind of the interesting thing about the Bureau of Reclamation analysis for these different diversion alternatives. Is right now in the plan that they've presented to the stakeholder input group, they have not defined the end user. No municipalities have stepped up to use this water. Silver City and Grant County have their Grant County Water Regional Water Project, which looks at, you know, regionalizing the water distribution system between Silver City and the mining district. developing new groundwater wells over by the airport and some water reuse, but they're not bought in at all to a Gila River diversion project. So we have no municipalities that have stepped up to the plate. Now, we do have irrigators in the Cliff Gila Valley who do have some ideas about using this water. However, we've also heard farmers and ranchers in the Cliff Gila Valley can't really afford this water. So it's still very, very, very vague as to who the ultimate users of this water will be.
I actually heard at one of the recent Southwest County Commission Alliance meetings, I heard one of the commissioners, Hugh B. McKean from Catron County, say that ranchers aren't going to be able to afford this water. So at least one rancher understands that this water is going to be pretty much out of their reach.
Right. I mean, you know, even if you didn't build a big diversion project, just the exchange costs alone are $2 million a year. So if we wanted to use 14,000 acre feet of Gila River water, we have to pay an exchange cost so that for any water that gets taken out of the Gila has to be replaced downstream in Arizona with Central Arizona Project water. And the going rate right now for cap water is $122 an acre foot. So if we were to divert the full 14,000 this year, we'd be looking at close to $2 million in exchange costs, which is huge for farmers and ranchers to afford on a per acre foot basis. So,
wow. So you've said that at the end of 2014, New Mexico has to notify the Secretary of the Interior if we're planning to use the Gila River water or not. Are there any other deadlines coming up before that in 2013 or 2014?
Really, there are no deadlines in 2013. What we'll be seeing as the stakeholder input group is these draft reports as they come out from the ISC contractors. And we probably won't see any Bureau of Reclamation reports, like I said, until early 2014. So the ISC has committed to quarterly stakeholder meetings. So we'll have presumably four of those meetings in 2013 where the ISC will be updating folks. And the stakeholder input group will be meeting and reviewing and providing comment on contractor reports as they come out. And of course, the Gila Conservation Coalition will be updating folks through our email list.
So you'll be letting folks know what kind of action they can take.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think basically, you know, the bottom line is that these non-diversion alternatives are an affordable, cost-effective way to meet our future water needs while at the same time keeping water in the Gila River, which, as everyone knows, provides a huge economic benefit to our region. Okay, we'll be right back after this short break. Back to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Allison Civic, and I'm here with my Earth Matters co-producers, Donna Stevens of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance and Kim McCreary of the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance for part two of our holiday show. And Kim, I know you wanted to talk about a few other things that the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance has going for 2013. So why don't you kick us off here?
Well, great. Okay, thanks, Allison. I wanted to bring up another national monument proposal. A lot of folks that live in our area have lived in northern New Mexico, and of course we care about our state at large. So I wanted to tell people about the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument proposal. This area is about 28 miles north of Taos, and if the monument is created, it would protect about 312,000 acres. The Rio Grande runs right through this area. That's right where the gorge is. There's the Ute Mountain Proposed Wilderness, as well as the Rio San Antonio Wilderness Study Area. And this area is home to thousands of birds in the winter because it's part of the Rio Grande Migratory Flyway. So it's really a very critical area. From an economic standpoint, the BBC research and consulting firm recently issued a report, and they have said that if this monument comes to be, it would have a significant impact on the local economy, bringing in about approximately $15 million to this area and also creating some 300 new jobs. So from an economic standpoint, it's also a win. And I just wanted to say to folks again, the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument and the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument, we really need people to continue to give their public support. If you go on to our website, nmwild.org, you can send a letter to the president asking him to use the Antiquities Act to create these monuments, and also to contact Senators Jeff Bingaman and Tom Udall to thank them for really pushing this forward and to let them know that you are behind them. So if you could do that, that would be great. And we certainly hope that in 2013, we will have some 800 to 900,000 acres of land protected here in New Mexico.
That sounds great, Kim. And remind everybody of your website again to go to get more information on these proposals.
Nmwild.org.
Okay.
Great. The last thing that I just wanted to bring up has to do with the Eco Forum that we co-sponsored with the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce in December of 2012. It really was a great success. A lot of folks showed up. We were able to share with the audience current economic information that was analyzed by Headwaters Economics. And again, I just want to reiterate something that they found out, because I thought this is very interesting. For the last four decades, the Western economy has outperformed the rest of the country when it comes to personal income, employment, and population growth. And their report concluded that protected public lands is what gives us a competitive advantage. As a matter of fact, in the non-metropolitan counties in the West, with more than 30% of the county's land federally protected, they have had an increase in job growth by about 345%, which is a pretty much a whopper over those 40 years. And if you compare that with similar counties that have no protected federal public lands, their employment has increased by 83%. So it looks like having protected public lands can be very much an asset to rural communities and their economy. So in 2013, we want to build on that, get the word out more, and continue to build the Gila Business Promotion Program, which we started in 2012. And basically what we do is provide free advertising, both in our newsletters and on our website, for businesses that support our mission. And, you know, we're really pleased because we have businesses in Grant County as well as Catron County. So we're going to be building on that too. So I just wanted to let people know more about it. So thanks.
Thanks, Kim. Wow, that's great news, and I look forward to seeing these new national monuments come to fruition in 2013. So, Donna, there are some exciting events and field trips coming up in 2013. Can you tell our listeners more about what you've got going and how to get involved?
Well, coming up in early February, on Saturday, February 2nd, is the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. This is a national festival. It travels all over the country, and this is the third time that we'll be having it right here in Silver City. And so we'll be sending out some information about that. We're still planning that. We've got some great films lined up. The whole point of this film festival is to inspire activism through films. So we show these really great films. It's not just a bunch of gloom and doom about environmental problems. There's also inspiring stories about how people have gotten involved and made a difference. It is possible. So we'll be showing those films on Saturday, February 2nd. Stay tuned for more information about that.
And who's sponsoring the Wild and Scenic Film Fest?
This is sponsored by the Gila Conservation Coalition.
And where can people go for more information?
People can go to GilaConservation.org. And we'll have the schedule up there very soon about exactly what films we'll be showing. There'll be some feature-length films as well as some short and some very entertaining films, too. There's some great films to choose from. Another event that's coming up next year will be the 9th annual, can you believe it, 9th annual Gila River Festival.
Well done! Yay!
So the dates are set for that. It will be September 19th through 22nd. That will, again, be a four-day weekend, a Thursday through Sunday. And we're in the planning stages of that. We've got kind of a good problem to have, trying to top ourselves from the keynote presenter that we had in this year, 2012. We had a writer, Craig Childs, and he was very well received. And he did a fantastic presentation. And so we are trying to line up somebody who will be as good as Craig Childs and get people jazzed about that. We had some really great programs for the 8th Gila River Festival in 2012. We had, for the first time, we had a three-minute film festival where we solicited three-minute films from the audience, and we had a great variety of films, some made by kids, and that was very fun. We had some great field trips, as we usually do, that went to all different places, guided by experts. We had an event called The Great Conversation, which consisted of four people sitting around the campfire and telling their stories about how they relate to the Gila. And they all had very different perspectives. So that was very interesting to see how people are kind of intimately connected with our backyard landscape here. And we had a puppet parade, which was really fun, fantastic puppets, parading down Bullard Street. And what other kinds of events did we have, Allison?
Yeah, well, super field trips. We did the kayak trip. We actually had decent flow in the Gila. And for this trip this year, we were actually able to float the Gila lower box, which was about an 8 mile or so stretch, and those folks had a terrific time. I wish I could have been with them. So Donna, you mentioned that you're in the planning phase for the 9th annual Gila River Festival. If people want to join the planning committee, how do they do that?
They could call you, Allison, at the Gila Conservation Coalition office. So, again, you could go to gilaconservation.org, or I could tell you the phone number, which is 538-8078. And we're always looking for new volunteers to help us with the planning so that we get fresh ideas and keep this an innovative event every year.
Great. And Kim, Nimwa's got some amazing field trips going for 2013, right?
Yeah, we sure do. We've got a lot going on actually around the state. And if you're interested in what's happening throughout the state, you can either pick up our 2013 Wild Guide or go to our website again, nnwild.org. And I just wanted to mention two that we're having right here in the Gila. One will be May 4th, and we've spent a lot of good time talking about the importance of the Gila River and the Gila watershed. And this trip is actually going to take folks into the San Francisco River, the lower San Francisco River, where it winds its way through a critical wilderness study area. And I can tell you this place is absolutely fantastic. I've just seen loads of bear sign the last time I was there. So we're going to be taking folks into there. And then since I said that was May 4th, I'm now going to backtrack to March 30th and 31st. So I'm stepping back in time for 2013 here. We have a service project, and this is Hartbar Ranch. And Hartbar Ranch is the West Fork of the Gila. And what we're going to be doing is helping to restore wetlands in that area. And the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish actually purchased this property to protect its riparian habitat. And they retired some 92,000 acres of their beautiful Gila wilderness from grazing. So we'll be working with environmental scientist Matt Schultz with the New Mexico Environment Department. So we hope folks will come out and join us.
And so this is in the field. What kind of wetlands restoration will it be? Do you know?
Well, I do know that in talking with Matt, that some of it will be planting willows.
Oh, good.
Okay. But there may be some other things that we do depending upon what they need. This trip, this particular service project was actually planned for last year and had to be canceled because we had extreme weather events at the time.
Right.
And given how much work they actually need and help, we certainly wanted to reschedule it.
So it's an overnight. Where do people sleep? They camp out?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we provide everyone with complete information on where they can camp out. We usually have a potluck meal Saturday evening where everybody contributes something so we can all get together and talk. So it's as much an event to a project to really help get something concrete done, but also bring people together so they can enjoy the beautiful Gila River and the Gila Wilderness, and we can have some fun splashing around.
That's great. You know, when I went up to the Gila Gila Hot Springs and the cliff dwellings this past summer, the Heart Bar really got hit hard from fire, so I'm sure this restoration work will be great to do. So thank you, everybody, and thanks to our listeners. Thank you for joining us today on Earth Matters, and I want to wish everybody a happy new year and best wishes to you all for a happy and peaceful 2013.